Lord, exposing lies, deceptions, and all that has assaulted our way of life. We must take back our freedom and live as God designed in a free America that honors our Constitution and our Creator. Our experts in medicine, ministry, law, military, environment, and education empower us to grow together as a nation. For such a time as this, the Whistleblower Report offers truth and solutions.
Good evening. My name is Andrija Klarić from Croatia, independent journalist and entrepreneur, and together with me is Dr. Mike Eden.
Hello, hello, Andrija. So I'm chief scientist for Truth to Health Foundation and a career research scientist. And it's great to be working with you again today.
Well, today will be a very interesting topic, and just to have a better understanding, last weekend was symposium in Croatian Parliament, and we had a really great team of international experts together with Dr. McKibben and Mr. Todd Callender and others. There was 16 of them, and we had a really rare chance to present to members of parliament in Croatia what was really the truth in the last 3 years, not what they were listening from our officials and from propaganda side of media. And beside all these topics, I can say that there was five of them, and one of them was a very important one that we're going to discuss today. But let me mention that others were contamination with plasmids of DNA in virus, and SV40, what was found by Dr. Ken McKernan and his team. Second one was turbo cancers, that something was completely new after this max vaccination. And we went through all this detail, what bring us Dr. William Mackis and also Ryan Cole. After that, we discuss about mRNA toxicity vaccine. Michael Palmer wrote a book about this, and he brought out all the details why this vaccine with mRNA technology is toxic. Then we spoke about WHO. WHO now offering new treaty and international health regulations. And now it seems to that lots of countries now are thinking over to accept or not, and we are already facing that Philippines, then New Zealand, Slovakia, Estonia, and even India refuse it. And now there is other countries who also, it seems they will refuse it because they don't want to give rights for the future pandemics to some international body like WHO or what are above our national constitution. But today's topic is central bank digital currency. In Croatia, we are already in Eurozone, that means our official currency is Euro. And Chief of Central Bank Christine Lagarde says that Europe is going to the central bank digital Euro. And it will happen in the next 12 to 24 months. For sure, and completely this digitalization will come in our neighborhood, exactly in our homes. And we see that there is a danger from it. And we today will have a possibility to listen what Dr. Richard Werner says about it. But I think Dr. Yidin knows also some very important stuff about this.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. A great context setting, and again, congratulations on an event that you organised, and you've really got a great bunch of speakers. Hopefully, we can attach my interview file to one of these interactions that we are having. So, yes, before we get to Richard Werner and the CBDC, it's important, and it's so clear to me because I've spent all my time working on this. The CBDC, along with digital ID and the removal of cash, are the fundamentals of imposition of a completely illegitimate planet-wide control mechanism, which may sound hyperbolic, but that is what's happening. And I believe Richard Werner will explain to you what CBDCs are, and importantly, that they are an answer to a question that's not been asked. Their only purpose would be to control us. They're simply not necessary at all. But it all fits with the deception that we've experienced since 2020. For example, we've been lied to about a public health emergency. I don't believe there's ever been one. And on the back of the public health emergency, we have had to put up with being terrorized by our own governments with lockdowns and mass testing and masks and so on. And of course, I think there are two end games from this pandemic lie. One was ultimately to get you, all of us, used to following orders and rolling our sleeves up to be injected with materials, these mRNA products. They are intentionally harmful. So I'm sorry to say that, ladies and gentlemen. But the other reason for lockdowns and so on was, I think, to weaken the economy and the financial system, and in particular sovereign currencies, so that the miracle, the saviour, will be this CBDC. So just one thing to say about Richard Werner is that he's a very clever guy, and when he was a young man, he was placed as an economist in Japan, and so he was able to witness the deliberate economic ruin of modern Japan, and he wrote about this in a book called Princes of the Yen. It's available both as a film and a book. That's how I came to know Richard Werner, and I'm very much looking forward to hearing his presentation.
Well, I think I'm suggesting that we should go and take a look, and we'll put in two parts, and because there is a lot of information, and we should really run it in two parts and to make comments after every, because it's important for people to understand what is happening. I'm aware that they don't understand really what is the danger, but okay, let's go to the presentation. Okay,
thanks. Yes.
At the Croatian Parliament today. I would like to talk about central bank digital currencies and the threat they pose. Obviously, we have to discuss the economic pros and cons and benefits, but actually, there are many benefits. So let's go straight into it. It's a fact that roughly 90% of central banks across the globe are presently checking out central bank digital currency. This is from a McKinsey study. And of course, this is something that potentially could change the world and affect every one of us significantly. So it's something we should really consider in its implication. Now, first of all, what's new about central bank digital currency, CBDCs? What we're being told is the digital aspect. You know, the world is moving on, paper money is really old, everything's turning digital, so we need digital money. And that's also what, for example, the ECB is being saying. We need digital versions of the euro, there's Bitcoin, stablecoin, blockchain. We need something equivalent from the central banks in Europe. But this narrative has a problem, because actually, we have been using digital money. You could call it bank digital currency. And we've been using that for many decades. So it's not new. The digital aspect is not new. What is new about CBDCs? Well, what we've been using so far has been bank digital currency created and put into circulation by banks. And there are, of course, many, many banks in Europe, there are thousands of banks. Germany alone has more than 1,500 banks. So a very decentralized system of putting digital money in circulation. That's what we've been using, BDC. So what's the difference to CBDC? Oh, it's the C, isn't it? The central part. We are talking about a project centralized the issuance and the use of money, in fact, all of our money. Because, you see, bank digital currency, the digital money we've been using, is actually more than 90%, maybe something like 97% of all money. And for transaction values, it is, you know, close to 100% of the money that is being used in Europe and the Eurozone today. And so we have to really think about this, because the only difference is the centralization. Now, what are the benefits, there is the question, of centralizing our money and allowing centralized control of our money? Our monetary system over the past 300 years really has been an interesting system that can be called the two-tier system, where the public deals with banks, and the bank at the central bank. So it's like a pyramid structure. The central bank at the top dealing with only banks, and banks only dealing with the public. And because there are many banks in Europe, thousands of banks, that's actually a good thing. And you can show that the more banks you have, the more economic growth you have, generally the more prosperity you have. Because it's a decentralized structure. Decentralized decision-making structures are generally more stable, more reliable, more resistant to shocks, more resilient, and also they make for greater accountability, because the lower decisions are made in the hierarchy, the closer they are to the people, the more they are actually decision-makers are accountable. Any centralized structure which really only makes decisions at the top is usually much more prone to problems, crises, and also resource misallocation as power corrupts, and centralized total power and controls corrupts absolutely. And of course, we've seen this in the Soviet Union. We'll come back to that. So that's been the system we've had for 300 years, since we've had modern banking. It's been more than 300 years. And of course, the central banks have only been involved indirectly, because their direct participation in the general economy as a direct participant to the public has been paper money, but they've issued this through the bank. The banks have always been the intermediary dealing with the public, and that's allowed the banks to maintain their role, and as a public to have some influence on the many, many small banks that we have in some countries, where therefore the monetary system is not more democratic and egalitarian. Paper money does not allow central banks and the central planners to monitor or control transactions. Banks do have this power, but actually, if you look at them for 350 years, they have not really abused that power. They've been in charge of digital currency, and that hasn't been a problem. There is no real problem. Most of all, they haven't used their control over digital money against us. They haven't sold our information, as is being proposed by the central planners, and they have not exploited this in any way. And that's because it's decentralized, there is competition. They couldn't really play up because they're competing against each other, you see. Now, what we see is the biggest attempt at a coup d'etat, a takeover of the entire system of our society, in my view, in history. Central planners want to usurp this power of digital currency and centralize it to have totalitarian central control. And of course, the best way to illustrate that this clip, you'll find it on the internet. I mean, the key passage is only less than a minute. Augustine Carstens, who's the managing director of the Bank for International Settlement, and what he said about this. Let me try whether this is going to work. I'm going to press here, and we're going to skip verification at. Are you going to see this? I'm not sure whether you will actually see this. I hope you can see this. Here he is. Anyways, just a minute. Yes, well, he made it very clear. So what did he say? Let me just repeat. He doesn't think that the EBC option for cash, and it's like paraphrasing the EBC, but cash, with cash, we, that means the central planners, the central bankers, he's speaking from the central bank perspective. Sorry, there's still something running here and stop this in the background. Oh, it's the next central banker trying to tell us the reason why we need CBDCs. Okay, guys, it's my time now. We're going to talk about the dangers and threats of CBDCs. Okay, I'm going to shut you down here a little bit. So back to Augustine Constant. So what he said is, people tend to think CBDCs are equivalent to cash. But with just a modern update, digital, but with cash, we don't know who's using the money. $100 bill today, a 1,000 peso bill today. We don't know who's using it for what purpose, and we can't intervene. And may ask. Now he goes on. The key difference of paper money is that the central bank will have absolute control of the rules and regulations that will determine its use, and we will have the technology to enforce that. The technology. The CBDC is connected to this technology to enforce the rules that they make up, and they can make up the rules as they wish. They can initially be quite attractive, but they can later change it. And that makes a huge difference to cash or bank money, of course, as well. So let's continue now with my presentation. So much for what the central planners have admitted. Remember, how did Justin Trudeau, the leader in Canada, end the peaceful demonstrations by truckers against restrictions of human rights and basic freedom that were going on for weeks, and the government really didn't like it. And so they stopped it because their bank account was frozen, their ability to buy food, medicine, for them, their families were taken away. How did that happen? Well, they didn't have enough cash for them. It's cash is freedom, as it turned out, and no cash means no freedom and no freedom demonstrations. Their control over their digital money, which they relied on, relying on the promise of digital money, that left them at the beck and call of the government, and the government said, no, we're going to cut off your money. The control over their digital money had to be, at that time, taken by the government through legislation. Because we don't have CBDCs yet, you see. So they have to pass laws, which made it somewhat visible what they did, and is a bit embarrassing. And the laws were passed so the government compelled the banks to free peaceful demonstrators to cash. How did they know the names? Well, facial recognition. It was that old technology map. This is from the police report. The police froze 206 financial products, including bank corporate accounts, disclosed information of specific entities associated with vehicles, individuals, and companies, and even, you see, Bitcoin, shared 253 Bitcoin addresses with virtual currency exchanges. And, of course, there were all over the world people were supporting these freedom demonstrators, peaceful demonstrators, through donations on PayPal. Sorry, couldn't get access to that. They froze a payment processing account, PayPal, valued at $3.8 million. And that's how the truckers demonstration ended all of a sudden. Funny that no such financial controls have ever been used, like for some criminals. I mean, these peaceful demonstrators, what about serious criminals? Have they ever tried to use that against them? Oh no, they haven't. Isn't that strange, you see? Now, since 2020, of course, the idea of digital IDs, such as vaccination passports, and the link to control and coercion have been advanced further. And digital currency, of course, allows the Chinese-style social credit score system. If you behave in a way the government doesn't like, you can be punished quite directly. And it's access to your money that will be a painful thing that will be used. And it criticized the government, for example, the access to money could be restricted or taken away. So let's summarize. The digital aspect of CBDC is not new. What's new is that central banks are now stepping out of the shadows to rip off the century-old agreement, the concordat between banks and the central bank, to take on power directly, step into the retail banking arena, offer digital currencies to the public, competing effectively directly against the bank, which the retail CBDCs would do. And of course, even if they start out wholesale CBDCs, they can at any time of their choosing switch to retail. So that means central banks actually have a conflict of interest in their task to ensure good bank regulation, because they intend, as we now know, compete against the banks, but they're also the regulators of the bank. I mean, a retail CBDC is simply a current account at the central bank. And so, who needs the banks, you see? And the central plans, of course, they would prefer, and they will prefer, to then have everyone only use their account at the central bank. And you can easily ensure that if, for example, you have a banking crisis, which can be easily engineered, as most banking crises have been, by the central plan. So it's a bit like the referee in a football game deciding, well, I'm getting a bit bored. Actually, I'm a good football player myself. I'm going to score the goals now. And he joins the game while continuing to have the powers of a referee to blow the whistle on everyone. Stop you guys. I'm going to take out with the ball. Oh, I don't like what you're doing here. Yellow card. Oh, red card. Go off the field. Who's going to win that game? It's going to be the referee. Well, that's what central banks are doing when they say we want to issue CBDCs. So why are they doing this? What are their motives?
Well, I think we should really comment on this, and we will continue the second part with the presentation, because this is the important moment after this. Why they are doing, we will explain it later. But what is your comment, Dr. Yeadon, about what you heard until now?
Yes, no, it's a story that's fairly familiar, because I've listened to a couple of his lectures, but he's absolutely right. That the key thing is that the rules may start apparently quite benign, but that's the whole point. It's centrally controlled, and at will, they can change the rules right down to an individual you or I. For example, if we're saying things they don't like, they can turn off our ability to transact. And that fundamentally is what this is about. It's totalitarian control beyond the dreams of any of the earlier tyrants, I think.
I think it's also important to say that there is no necessity for this.
Yeah.
Today's digital money is working great. Yeah. There is no problem with it, and also we have alternative with cash. Of course, they already done it. It's important to say that Christine Lagarde says this is a digital cash. But this is not truth, because they already put a limit on cash spending. In Croatia, limit is 1,000 euros, and there is no limit for digital money. That means it's not the same. There is a limit on cash. And she's planning, and she said openly, planning to decrease this limit to 300 or 400 euros, because she said we need to fight against terrorism. Uh-huh. And when we put this in today's context, this context that in European Union we now have again borders, we dropped off Schengen because we are afraid, allegedly afraid of terrorism. And we just read today that they are expecting some terrorism attacks during this Christmas holidays. Then this could be opportunity for them to say, okay, we have to decrease using cash to 300, 200, because we are now facing threat from the terrorism. We saw this kind of game before, and we can see it again.
Yeah, you're right, it's a classic case of something that's called problem reaction solution. So the controllers want a particular solution, which is, I think, cashless CBDC. So they create the problem, and then they present the solution. In other words, I am asserting that if there are attacks where people adopt, people die, I sincerely believe it's the government of that country, perhaps in conjunction with intelligence agencies, that have done it. And I think they've done this many times.
Yeah, we saw it. We saw this kind of crisis, and found out later that they done it crisis on purpose, and there is no real reason. We can just remember the war in Iraq when they said that Iraq has a weapon for mass destruction, and finally found out that was completely lie, and they admitted, but it was already, well, finished. War was there and millions of people died. Okay, let's finish this part of discussion and we will be back in a short period. Hello everybody, here is Andrija Klarić from Croatia, independent journalist, and Dr. Mike Kieran, specialist with all kind of, we can say, things what happened in the last 3 years. And because he was the loudest voice in Europe, I remember him from the start, that showing people that something wrong is here and we need to take care of ourselves. Dr. Yiden, we had some discussion about this central bank digital currency, but in front of us we will have presentation from from Professor Richard Werner, who will explain why they are doing this. They are implementing central bank digital currency without necessity, but he will present what is the reason, what he thinks, what is the reason. And after that, I'm planning to make a comment because I had the interview. One interesting interview with David Webb, and he explained how they can do it, and that will come later. Well, okay. let's listen to the second part of presentation from Professor Richard Werner.
The BIS now plan to actually expand this idea of central bank digital currency to have a unified digital ledger that could usher in profound economic change. They themselves admit, the BIS being the central bank of central banks back to international settlement, it says that all assets could be put under this new blockchain. All assets could be tokenized, digitalized, and therefore be subject to control by the central banks. This would allow, as they say, seamless integration of your ownership of your house and your assets, financial asset, non-financial assets that are tokenized. And you see here, this programmability allows the central planners to force their rules as the game on you. They have the technology to do that, as you just heard from the managing director of the BIS. Is this just a conspiracy theory? Well, no, it cannot be, because it's not a secret. It's out in the open and has been for a few years. The Bank of England has formally asked the British government to make a public endorsement of this decision to allow central planners, when they issue the CBDCs, to use the programmability feature, giving the issuer total control over how, when, for what, by whom the money is spent. So we see here really not just an assault on our financial freedom or our political freedom, if you go with the protest demonstration, we also see, very interestingly, this has not been discussed anywhere else before in public, and what they don't want you to realize, it is also a takeover attempt by the central planners and central banks, which has become over the last half century independent from government and very, very powerful and de facto unaccountable. But they're now attempting to take over and assume parliamentary powers, the powers of parliamentarians, like in the parliament of Croatia or any parliament in Europe and other countries introducing CBDCs, because programmability is essentially assuming budgetary and fiscal powers, which so far have been the prerogative only of parliament and parliamentarians, and we understand is the foundation of democracy. That is also at stake. It is actually literally a coup d'etat against all of us, even against the state and democratic institutions. So why haven't they rolled this out already? I mean, it seems really attractive for central planners and totalitarian controllers. Well, McKinsey, in its study, found that, there's some obstacles to wider adoption. Obstacle number one, there is no market value proposition. This is a way of saying we don't need this. Trust remains a hurdle as people question the motives behind CBDC. Oh, sometimes people suspect government of aiming to monitor or restrict financial activities. Yeah, that's what it is. But of course, it's not governments. It's actually worse than that. It's a bunch of unaccountable central planners that are not even democratically accountable as governments are supposed to be. The central planners are not accountable to the democratic system directly at all. And so it's worse than that. And of course, the technical challenges, there could be service interruptions, including planned ones. So the conclusion is, what McKinsey already found, nobody needs CBDCs. Only the central planners want them. So that's how your pro and con, your cost-benefit analysis comes out. The bottom line is, we don't need it, there are no benefits. So why are we getting it? Well, they're trying to make us get it, because it serves to have centralized. And then all sorts of schemes could be run, such as climate priorities. Anything can be an excuse, for example, you know, a social credit score in general for good behavior, or carbon credit score. You've spent too much already on CO2-related activities. Sorry, your money is now working anymore. You want to travel outside the 15-minute zone? Well, sorry, your money's not working. It's not enough. And I mean, the unlimited schemes are possible. So really, the obstacles the CBDC promoter central planners find are cash and banks. They need to get rid of capital, and they need to get rid of bank, and they will if they get their way. So we must stop CBDC. It's really worth going out and having demonstrations out there at central banks for against these CBDCs. And central bankers don't have thick skin, unlike politicians. They will respond. Therefore, we have a very realistic chance to change their mind if we show strong resistance. They have a thin skin. They're not used to public direct resistance. So it is really worthwhile showing against central planners proposal to CBDCs. And that's my recommendation. We already found that the use of cash has been restricted in many countries, and also central banks have been on a multi-decade program to reduce the number of banks and actually lead the extinction of banks in the past 20 years. As Draghi, for example, said on the record, saying there's capacities in the banking sector in the Eurozone, the aim to reduce the number of banks, particularly in countries that have many banks and therefore are thriving economically or have been in the past. So which country is doing well economically in Europe? Well, Germany's had the largest number of banks, and that explains why its economy has been so robust. Many, many small local banks lending locally for productive business investment. But they've reduced the number of banks in Germany, coming down to zero. Well, essentially, the central bankers, when they get CBDCs, the number of banks will go down to close to zero. They will be the only bank in town who will get a gross bank style system. The central bankers have created property bubbles, Ireland, Portugal, Spain, and Greece, which are busted banks. They like that. They did it first in the periphery from 2005-2010, and then busted it and had a crisis. Then they did the same thing from 2009 until last year in Germany, huge property bubble, and some other central countries. Now there's going to be a banking crisis in 2 or 3 years' time. Anti-bank measures, the list is so long, how the ECB and the EU have been working very hard against banks. PSD2 is an example where they forced banks to divulge new information, which they've never misused so far, and give it to fintech companies just because you pressed the wrong click. I agree on some online thing, and now they have to give out your data. That's pretty outrageous and should be stopped as well. Central banks have been amassing ever greater powers over the past decade. They are the ones actually that have abused the power. They are responsible for boom and bust cycles. They created inflation. The recent inflation was started with the central bank massively expanding money creation for unproductive consumption, and that's why we've had inflation. They did this in March 2020. The Federal Reserve was leading that. Other central banks had to follow. They blame it on other things like war. They did the same in the 70s. And actually, even the 70s inflation was created by the central bankers. Same story. They blame it on other things, the OPEC embargo. It's not true. It's bank credit creation run by the central banks. That peaked already in early 73 in the US. In Germany, March 73 for June. And that caused the inflation of 74. There's a lead time to see the bank credit. Whereas the war in the Middle East was only in late October 73, and then oil prices were provoked in January 74, you see. It's too late. The inflation already peaked in Germany in first half of 73, so it couldn't have been the oil shock. So the key policy of central banks have been to reduce economic growth since the 70s, contraction of credit for productive purposes, especially on the creating standard bubbles, banking policies, and reducing economic growth. Very bad what they've done. Growth is not the enemy of the environment. Can apply sustainable economic growth without crises if you just make sure that bank credit is used for productive business investment, but the central planners have discouraged that through their policy. They've already killed 5,000 banks in Europe since the ECB took over, 20,000 banks in the last decades in the US. They don't like decentralization, they like centralization. They've created boom-bust cycles by encouraging property speculation funded by bank credit via the Basel Bank regulatory requirements. They intentionally created inflations of the 70s and 21, 22 inflation. They've manipulated crises to argue for greater power to themselves, which they have received, actually, but they've abused that power. They've become more powerful than ever. We have to now step in and stop that. The power of central banks is really too large. Banks actually create the money, and if banks create credit for productive business investment, you get a green box to get high growth and low inflation. That's what we need. But central planners have ensured that money creation is used for consumption, March 2020 and also in the 1970s, get inflation. Or on the left side, case one, bank credit is raised for asset purchases. That gives us, well, for many years, it can be a great asset boom, lots of money is being made, everyone is happy, but actually it's unproductive. You are causing a bust, a financial crisis, banking crisis, and then economic recessions. They've done this all over the world, 100 banking crises in just a few decades. My quantity theory of disaggregated credit has long demonstrated this public in peer-reviewed journals. We need to avoid the recreation of the Goss bank, central bank, model bank system in the Soviet Union, which CBDCs will lead up to. So we need to stop this and step in. We need to actually create more small banks, local banks, community banks, and supports decentralization in money creation. So let's stop the introduction of CBDCs. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupt, absolutely. CBDC is too much power. And of course, watch out, because they're going to introduce digital IDs under flu virus pretense or immigration. Now, Tony Blair is saying, the immigration that he started or accelerated in England, we should now introduce digital IDs as a measure. Well, these are just excuses by the central planners. And therefore, let me conclude. We need to resist this and stop the introductions of CBDCs. Thank you very much.
Dr. Yeren, what is your comment?
Yes, it is very sobering hearing it from a man who spent his professional life around banking and money. When you hear it laid out like that, Professor Werner, just to recap, says, there is no legitimate reason for the introduction of CBDC, and the only effect of it will be to cede to central, hidden people, unelected people, unaccountable people, complete control. And here's an important thing. All of this has been about control at the individual level, right down to individual people, me or you or any listener. Previously, powerful people have had significant control at the level of a society, maybe a class of people, but they can't control an individual. But with this system, they will be able to, make you do things at risk of exclusion if you don't comply, and they can prevent you doing things for using the same threat. And so I think he's right that perhaps I've not seen this as is equally as lethal to your freedom as being injected with intentionally dangerous biological materials, which is my specialty. So I think he said something very important there, where he said we must stop the introduction of CBDC, and I think the loss of cash, which we believe they will want to accomplish. And I think importantly, unlike the politicians who, he said, have thick skins, the banking group are not used to being protested against by the public. So a large protest, peaceful but large protest outside Bank of England or the ECB persistently may have more traction than protesting our governments about the lockdowns.
Yeah, my question is, where in Croatia are we going to protest, because we have now euro and we should go in Frankfurt, where is ECB. Because in Croatia nobody really making any decision about this, we don't have any influence. Well, there is one important question, how they are planning to force people to do it. And I spoke with John Titus. I had an interview a few months ago, because he was covering what was happening during the pandemic with the central bank, exactly Fed. What Fed done it, when they made this arrangement, with whom, and how they implement, exactly they implemented quantitative easing too, but on the wrong way. They gave money to people for spending, and that's how they create inflation. And that was their purpose. They admit it on their website. They said, we have to create inflation. This is our goal. And always the question, why is goal to create inflation? Because the only advantage who have in inflation is states who owes lots of money. People who has savings, they're losing money, because they're losing purchasing power. The most important measure for your money and for your financial stability is your purchasing power. If you don't have it, then you are poor. Well, if you have some savings and you have high inflation year from now, you will have much less money than you have it without doing anything. And who will have more money? More money you have state, because the way of calculating taxes, the level for calculating tax will go up, and there will be more income for state, less savings for people. Well, inflation is hidden taxes that take you money today, spend, and then you pay it in 1 year period when you have less purchasing power. And you cannot do nothing about it, except maybe you can transfer your money to some other way of saving, for example, immobility or maybe financial assets. But I spoke with David Webb, David Rogers Webb. He wrote a book, A Great Taking, and he explained that they are legally prepared everything for the next financial takeover of all assets from people. They were preparing for last 50 years, and now we are not aware that in case of future financial crisis, huge crisis, the only one who is protected, who have security, are the one on the top. Even when we think that if we have some kind of mortgages and we have to only repay just part of the mortgages because we paid major part, we don't know that these papers, these mortgages are already given somewhere for security for other kind of financial assets. And he explained everything in the book. That means they're prepared in case of crisis, they will take our assets without any chance for us to complain, because we don't have a legal way to complain and we don't know about this. And well, he explained it in details, and I was really shocked. I didn't know that, because we know and we think that we have some assets and we have some savings, but if they're going to take us immediately without our knowledge, and there is no way that we can fight against it, and then we will become dependent on state, and then state can offer us some kind of salvation, like digital wallet. And they say, okay, maybe you can save your savings despite that bank went to bankruptcy, but you can save it if you take digital wallet, and I can put digital money, exactly central bank digital currency, on your account. And what will people do? They will accept it, because there is no other option. And that's my idea
I agree. I've seen the same interviews with David Rogers Webb. I haven't yet read the book, The Great Taking, but I have it on my list to do. And it's horrifying. I agree with you that over many decades, ladies and gentlemen, the law has been changed in your country and mine such that things you think you own, you now actually have what's called, it's a legal fiction, it's called beneficial ownership. You don't actually own the house, but you know, in the event of a complete financial meltdown, we will find that all of our assets have been pledged as collateral in loans already given perhaps to your country, and therefore the creditors, who are the, I call them the perpetrators, the people operating all of these crimes at very high level, they will legally be able to seize your assets, including your house. I think it goes further, Andrea, even than the great taking and the control through making us have a digital wallet, digital ID, and the centralizing of all purchasing power. I know this is upsetting for people, but because I spent over 30 years in the pharmaceutical industry and research, I'm afraid what I'm going to tell you is upsetting. That is, the mRNA injections, they're not just harmful, which I'm sure by now most of you have worked out, they are deliberately, intentionally harmful by design. There are three or four obvious, to me, mechanisms of toxicity, and molecular biologists have found another few. So clever people have turned their energies and creativity against their fellow man, presumably in service for money or privileges, to serve these so-called elites. And I think, in addition then to this digital tyranny, what it is, I think they will gradually reduce the population, and I think they'll do it this way. You may be aware that the WHO is seeking to bring in a pandemic treaty, and even if they fail, they have what are called the international health regulations that may also compel governments all around the world to pay attention to what the WHO does. So, you know, if, and I think it'll be when, they declare the next public health emergency of international concern, our countries will almost certainly do things like lockdowns, and again wreck the economy, and as a condition of being able to continue to exist, I think certainly to travel, and potentially if we have digital currency, then even just to buy food, I think a condition of maintaining the validity of your digital ID will be that you are up to date with the most recent WHO recommended quotes vaccines. They'll just be poisons. So because I know this, I have already personally begun, and I recommend you decide for yourself what to do, I've already begun to transfer my fiat money into other forms. And you can use your own imagination, but so some of them are assets that are not seizable by the state because they're anonymous, and others are blockchain-based assets. I know I'm taking a risk in doing this, but if you listen to Richard Werner and perhaps myself, we're at risk anyway. If we do nothing, I think we will lose. I do believe, however, that if enough of us decide I'm not going to comply, I'm not going to take a digital ID, I'm in a fortunate position where if I can transfer some assets to non-electronic money, I will find people who want to sell me things like food and fuel, for example. Whether we call that a black market or just a parallel economy, I don't know, but I do not believe I'm going to be alone. I think we can survive this by a combination of refusing to comply and adopting an alternative, decentralized way of life to the extent we possibly can. And I think if we approach it with what I call a settler's mindset, you will have initial hardship, but afterwards we'll be able to create a way of being that is to our advantage rather than that of the central banker. So that's certainly my intention, Andrea, and I wanted to let people know that I think that's probably a sensible thing to do. As my dad used to say, hope is not a strategy. We can't just rely on being able to resist this. I think we should, in addition, take steps. That means we have not to panic, and we have some independent decision making in the events, which I think will happen, but the next crisis is imposed upon us. That's what I'm going to do.
Yes, and let me just mention one more important thing. You know that we already tested universal basic income for years. And now, in case of a huge financial crisis, and for sure it will happen, everybody expecting this, there will be lots of people who will stay unemployed. And then they will be forced to receive universal basic income in the form of digital money, exactly central bank digital money. And also beside that, there are lots of people already who are out of financial system, and for them will be also offered this universal basic income. And when we together bring this new, we can say, digital world, like Yuval Harari says, that people will be, more or less, we don't know what to do with them, and then we'll be useless, and we'll give them video games and drugs. And that will be the way how people will accept the digital wallet and central bank digital currency. And after that, there is no way back.
Yes, I agree. If we allow this to be installed, there's no way back. And just listen, please, ladies and gentlemen, to what Andrea just said, quoting Yuval Harari, who's a senior advisor to the World Economic Forum. Do you think that the powers that be are going to bend their back to grow the food, to operate supply chains, to bring what they have already called useless eaters, food, water, supplies, medicine, schooling for their children, transport? Do you think they're going to do that? Or do you think, potentially, given I've explained the mechanism whereby they will do it, do you think instead they will execute these people? And I'm afraid to say, they're going to do the latter. There's not a chance that the wealthiest families in the world are going to spend their money to give you free stuff. It's not going to happen. It's okay within a stable, potentially growing society. We are used to using taxpayers' money to support the weakest amongst us, the most disadvantaged. What you can't do is have a system where maybe a quarter or a third of the people, maybe more, have no purpose in life, which of course is awfully depressing. But from a purely transactional standpoint, do you think these people who have already shown a diabolical mindset in terms of what they've done to us over the last few years, do you think they're really going to go through with what they say and provide free stuff, UBI, and video games, and warm houses, clothes, and so on? Or do you think they would prefer, like, finding they have surplus cattle in their farm? I think it's the latter. I think they will tell us. So it's very, very important that you take this seriously, because however bizarre it sounds, this is what's coming.
Thank you, Dr. Yuen. Well, it was really fruitful this evening to hear all this. And well, for our listeners, think over it, listen what Dr. Yuen says, listen to what the Professor Richard Rohn said, and then decide for yourself, because in case that something happened like this, maybe it will be too late. Well, we see each other very soon in some other show next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today on the Whistleblower Report from Truth for Health Foundation. Check out our website, www.truthforhealth.org. Join us to save. We are silent no more. We urge you to sign up for our email alerts, donate to support our legal defense work to secure the human and civil rights secured by law, and to live our lives in accordance with the U.S. Constitution and God's truth. We are here to bring you hope and solutions for such a time as this, with all that is assaulting our way of life. Join us and stand strong against the lies and deception, and speak out, get loud, get involved. God bless you. and thank you for joining us.